It's Monday evening, it's 7 p.m, it's time for the DL Debate. Check
this. The DL Debate, brought to you by the Dry Arch Complex 24-hour service station, Letterkenny. We're here for all your needs.
Right, folks, hope all is well. The sun's high in the sky. Hope everybody's staying safe. We're going to do EGAA hour here for you, episode 10 of the DL Debate, featuring Gidor's Danny Kern, who's currently out in Abu Dhabi, to talk us through that brilliant season 10 years ago, 2010, that All-Ireland Under-21 run to an All-Ireland final and Ulster Championship victory. Also, we have Meath legend Bernard Flynn coming to talk to us about his glittering career.
Right, folks, now in the DL Debate, we're taking a look back to the 2010 season, and a remarkable season by many standards for Under-21s. Kind of came from nowhere under Jim the Messiah, all the way to an All-Ireland final. We were narrowly beaten by Dublin in a late missed penalty by Michael Murphy, which cracked off the bar. I'm delighted to say I'm joined all the way from Abu Dhabi by one of the players of that brilliant season, Danny Kern. Danny, welcome to the show.
Cheers, Brendan. Good to be on.
Great, man. Danny, you know what? After I was looking at the team sheet there and looking, I thought, your story probably, we could talk on its own, really, in terms of exile. And you went on a bit of an adventure, yourself and your lovely wife-to-be, Rachel, of course. You went to Qatar and then Abu Dhabi. Was it long after 2010 that you headed on this adventure?
We left home in 2013. So it was a couple of years after. I was still under 21 the year after, 2010. So once that season had finished, played a year with the club, and then we decided then, after we both finished our postgrad degrees down in Galway, we decided to take off on a bit of an adventure. And we were only supposed to be away for a year or two, maybe three, but it's been 6 years now and we're still out here.
Danny, do you know what? It's remarkable. I would love to get your, just tell the listeners about GAA out there. Myself, I was only away for a year when I was 19 in England, but what the GAA did for me when I was over there in Northampton is unreal, around, you know, work and, I suppose, you know, socialising and meeting friends and just that backup of meeting people. And I found myself a few times with issues that have come up in the GAA here. Well, there's a bit of an anti-GAA. I think it goes back to Crow Park and they see the big money deals, but they forget about the clubs and what they're doing for people in the community, and also for our exiles, the likes of you being away from home. And what did the GAA do for you between living in Qatar and living in Abu Dhabi?
Well, when we first moved out, I knew that there was a GAA set up over in Qatar. We had Oryx Nahiran, and I knew a lad from Gidor, Charlie Dugan. He was involved with them. So when I first landed out, he was in the blower right away. And he was like, listen, come on down and meet the boys, and yeah, you might we'll get you in to see what the setup was like and whatnot. So I went down, and there's a few good lads, very, very good GAA men around there. And we actually had a couple of Donegal boys on that team. There was Ryan Bradley actually came out the year after Mayo knocked them out in 2013, I think, in the summer. Ryan Bradley came out. We had John Sheeran there, we had Charlie, Shamie McGlynn, Frank's brother from Glenfinn, he was involved. And the GAA really, really made me feel at home when I first went away, because it was just that kind of sense of community and something that you're always used to, you know, like just the crack and going out for a few pints after training or after a game, and just keeping in touch with GAA and stuff, sharing stories. It was great now. And then, so we spent a year in Qatar, and then we came across to Abu Dhabi. Like, so Abu Dhabi and the Fianna actually have, I don't know if this is the actual, if it's on record, but it's the largest GAA club outside of Ireland, I think. I think we have just over 400 members in the club, and it's a fantastic setup. Like, it's all, I mean, like, it's all the board are all doing it on a volunteer basis, and the work that they have to get through while balancing their own jobs is fantastic. Like, so the boys, the club managers, the committee and whatnot, they really do put a shift in. Like, so overall, like, in terms of moving away, the GAA really has helped us settle. Like, even for Rachel, she gets to go to all the social events and so on. So yeah, it was a huge thing for us to get involved in the GAA.
Yeah, Matt. I find that fascinating, Danny, looking, particularly, we know obviously with places like America and then Australia, you know, the GA is well embedded in, but when you see it in the Middle East there, you know, just find it that bit more fascinating. I've seen you obviously on doing interviews and footage of you and all, which is brilliant for us to see here. But see, in terms of championship, and then Danny, is there, do the different areas then have their own championship, and then do they play off each other, or how does it work, the competition?
Yeah, so what we have here is we work off, there are eight senior teams. So you have senior, intermediate and junior level. So there are eight senior teams. So you have ourselves, Abu Dhabi, we have actually two senior teams. Dubai would have two senior teams, A and B. And then you have Sharjah Gales, you have Qatar have a team, you have Al Ain, you have Bahrain, you have Jumeirah Gales there as well. So the way it is, because of the heat out here, it's impossible to play a 60-minute full game. And logistically, we don't have the size of the pitch to be able to field 13-a-side or even 15-a-side. So we play a 9-a-side, and we play it off in kind of like a mini tournament over the course of one day. So you have your group stages, and the top two go through to a semi-final, and then you go and play the final later on. But that's taking place over in one venue. So every senior team gets to host a round of the league, and then usually the championship is held here in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, and Danny, see, in terms of logistics, travelling around, is it what's the between the different cities and that? Is it it's obviously you always meet up for those tournaments, so is it hard getting around, and do people just sort their own expenses, or how does that work?
Yeah, well, when we were, I kind of had a rude awakening to GA as well in terms of the money side of it. When we were in Qatar, we had to fly to all the tournaments. So it wasn't a case of just jumping on the bus, or we had to fly to all these tournaments. So you had to pay for your own flight. You had to go to, you had to pay for your own accommodation. Well, the club would help you pay for the accommodation. Now, the club was very good now, but you're paying for your own flights. And depending on what time of year it was, like if you had a tournament coming up in, say, February around the holiday time, trying to get a flight to Dubai was almost as just as expensive to get a flight to bloody London or to Dublin. Like, it was crazy, some of the money that we put out in it. But we all did it for we did it all the time just for the love of the game. Like, we loved going away in those weekends and getting involved and getting playing in the tournaments. Like,
That's very interesting. I find that fascinating. I would love to see some more footage on that, Danny, in the heat. Fair play. I mean, I suppose the worst ever played on was out in with Donegal, New York, a few summers there, and that dead heat, and it certainly takes it out of you. So it takes a bit of getting used to, Danny, just as I say, looking back to that that 2010 season and all the 21s now, you've been saying you played the following year, and you also played the year before. So you must have been well ahead of your time in terms of being physically ready. You know, 3 years at under 21 is not bad doing, and obviously 2010 being the big one.
Yeah, I think what helped me a lot around that age group when I was about 18, we came out of, when I was about 17, 18, I went to college, I went to UCD when I was 17, and I was playing freshers football at that time, and it was the first real exposure that I got to real kind of inter-county players at a kind of a decent level for that age group. Like, we had the lads in the club, like, but the team we had in freshers in UCD, it was coached by Malachy O'Rourke, the ex-Monaghan manager, and we were playing, there was lads playing for Wexford, Westmeath seniors, Meads, all the way down to even Wicklow, Carlow. All these boys were playing senior under-county footballers that were along with me in the freshers team. So I kind of that, it was a real jump up in standard for me at that time, and that really helped me when I came back to play club and then eventually for the county. Like,
very interesting, Danny. Just thinking. So you had experience of the year before, where Armagh obviously had hammered us, and then we drew Armagh in the first round again. And I'm just thinking, Jim took over. There's obviously a lot of talk here about the whole build-up, the Donegal's All-Ireland one in 2012, and McGuinness meeting people and individuals and all that. What was the background of Jim taking over there? Peter McGinley was there, Maxie Kern, Pat Shovlin, God rest him, was there. What was the background? Did you realise, did you sense straight away this is going to be different, or how was things early on?
Yeah, I think I didn't really know about McGuinness too much. Now, I know that he was in charge of Glenties and he took them to the county, he won the county with them a couple of years previous. And I did actually, I remember his last few years playing, I would have come up against them once or twice for the club. Like, but I didn't really know too much about him. Maxi I knew quite well from underage setups in Donegal. And then Pat and Peter were with them as well. But the first impression I got of Jim himself was, Jesus, man's intense. Like, you're really hard to concentrate on what you were saying to him, because you kind of knew, even from just initial contact, first few conversations we had, he was processing every word you were saying, and he was taking it all in. And, you know, if he didn't agree with you, he'd pull you up on something, you know. So, but I think what struck me the most about that setup, them lads that were in charge, was the professionalism. Like, I mean, we were going in, we were training, like, and the training was grueling, tough old training, and then we were doing proper video analysis sessions for maybe two and a half hours after maybe a two and a half hour training session on the pitch. The amount of walkthroughs that we would do in preparation for games, challenge matches, you know, getting ready for all these different scenarios, what happens if we're down to 14 or 13 men. I mean, like, he had really had all the homework done before we hit the pitch against Armagh. But he took, from a coaching point of view, I had never experienced anything like it before.
Fantastic. And you know, the Armagh game, obviously, as I say, the year before, we'd been hammered by them. It was in Brewster Park. We done them 1-9-9, and it was interesting just looking through, you know, as the season went on, like, keeping a clean sheet was vital and getting a goal ourselves, and it happened that night on the first night. And, well, your memories of that game, was it a slow start as the season went on, or, you know, it's a new team, you know, new team, you knew each other a lot of from the year before, some of you, but, you know, new management and that. And what was that first game like, that initial match in Brewster?
It was a tense enough kind of build up, because I think he delayed naming the team to near enough the match itself. So you're always kind of wondering whether you're going to be in or out, or who's going to be in and whatever. Like, the year before, I was lucky enough to be involved. Well, lucky enough to be involved in that team that lost to Armagh. But I remember that day I was picking up Jamie Clark. And I think I did fairly well on him. I think he scored 3 points from frees. But I was thinking then the following year that if I'm put in on this man again, I'm going to be ready for it. But I think I was stationed around the half back line. But that, to get over that first hurdle against Armagh was huge. I mean, that really got the ball rolling that year. I mean, we all, I think, as a group of players, had a sense of belief that we could actually be successful. You know, like, we're after beating Armagh. They destroyed us last year in the 21s, so we were like, right, maybe there is something here. Maybe if we keep building and keep training hard, you know, we could push on and maybe get something out of it. But I think in the game itself, I think when Jimmy Carroll got the goal, I think that was huge. Like, the goal in that kind of game, because it was a tight, claustrophobic kind of game where scores were at a premium. But I think when we rattled the net, I think that kind of settled us down a good bit, and then we kind of kicked on a bit.
That's it. Goals won games by, and the Brick got 6 points as well. You moved on to the semi-final, and again, Danny, a bit like Armagh, you know, the goal again was the big turning point in the game. Murphy getting it this time, and you'd beaten Derry in a semi-final.
Yeah, I remember that day. I remember there was a wild cold snap that year, I think, and it lasted all the way up into March and maybe just early April. And I remember that day it was absolutely freezing going out doing the warm up, like, but we were fired up for it, we were ready to go. And I think it was probably one of the most impressive wins for us over that campaign, because we were, Big Pete got the line, I think, just before half time. Now, I can't really remember what happened. I'm from chatting to him, like, he doesn't kind of, I don't think there was really much in it, but being down to 14 against the likes of Derry, who had, I think they had James Keel playing midfield that day for them, and he was just a different animal altogether. Like, he was fielding balls and he was striking balls over the bar from 30, 40 yards. He was unreal that day. But, we really dug deep that day against Derry and to come out. And I think building on the Armagh win then to get over Derry, being reduced to 14, really gave us a kind of a tight bond and a a real sort of togetherness that was going to help us in the final then, like.
And you know, Keith, I suppose, yeah, what a player that guy was. Very unlucky, Danny, around timing. You know, timing can be everything as a player. I think he came in there at a bad time. Yeah, looking at the stats, he had some game that night. But it looked then he was in the final against Cavan, and again, that clean sheet standing you. This time you didn't hit one goal, you hit two goals. And, you know, Murphy won 5, Brick won 2. You know, it looked like the team was really beginning to form and know each other and control games, you know, which was a hallmark of what McGuinness's teams would do in the future.
Yeah, I think once, I remember once Michael hit the net that night, I don't know what came over me, but I just had this feeling that we were going to see out this game. I think we were controlled, we were well drilled. We worked so hard over the course of the year. Like you're talking about clean sheets there. I think we only conceded one, and that was in the final. And even in the challenge games, we were very defensively strong. And it was all down to the coaching. I mean, we were so well drilled at keeping out the men and making sure that they weren't getting into the danger zone, that if we kept doing that after Michael got the goal, that we would come out on top. Because I knew we had the forwards to do the business. You had the likes of Brick, Jimmy Carl. You know, you had Mark McHugh would pop up with a score or two. Anton McFadden was there as well, Daniel McLaughlin, these boys, like, I mean, these are quality forwards, like, so I knew if we could keep them out at that time that we'd and keep the net clean, that we'd a fair chance of going on, and that's what happened. And then Brick got the icing on the cake, was the bang in to really kill them off.
Yeah, and Danny, do you know, just take us back to that time, because I it's hard to believe what was going to happen in the next 2 years, but not forgetting Donegal GA was on its knees at the time in terms of interest and where the team was going. You know, no one could have envisaged what was going to happen. So you had just won an All-Star Under 21 title. What was the vibe in Donegal at the time? Was there big exposure? Was there much celebrations? Because, you know, Donegal GA football has jumped so high now, but at that time it must have been low. And it was that run and that All-Star final, I think, which started to gain some interest again in it.
Yeah, the celebrations after the Cavan game were unbelievable. I mean, it was brilliant. I remember just when we pulled into Ballyshannon, and then we landed, like, the people were out in the streets waiting for us. And we, like, to be honest, we kind of knew that there'd be some sort of kind of noise being made, but we didn't realise that to the extent of what we were going to meet, like. So then when we moved on to Donegal Town, getting up on the back of the lorry and having the whole of the whole diamond was covered. It was just something that I'll never forget from that time. It was unbelievable, and it's hard to kind of put it into words what I was feeling, because you were just kind of caught up in the moment, like, you know. And it was a testament to the kind of coaching that we got at the time, because I don't think that previous Donegal teams and senior teams as well, all very good kind of footballing teams, but never really had the kind of, I don't know, for the want of a better word, bite to kind of go on and maybe kind of clinch a bit of silverware. So maybe it was something kind of, it was definitely it's no surprise that Donegal went on after that then to kind of be as successful as they were under Jim.
Fantastic stuff, brilliant stuff, Danny. Great, great memories. So we're up to April 17th now, which is close to the Times is on it 10 years ago now. It's a semi-final, it's Parnell Park, and it's Tipperary. And, you know, you're going into, I suppose, the uncharted territory. It's always, you know, Ulster, and we kind of know everywhere around there and battle out and know the teams and that. But when you go out Ulster, then things change, you know, and the different parks and that. And what was your thoughts going into Tipperary? Were you confident? I mean, a 12-4 victory says that we controlled the game again. And, you know, despised them pretty handily. But how did the game go in your eyes?
Yeah. Well, just I remember the lead up to the semi-final. We were sure that Kerry were going to beat Tipperary in the Munster final, like, because we had played Kerry in Maynooth, I think, in a challenge match a couple of months previous, like, and we had a real, like, it was a real war of attrition against them. Like, I mean, there was nothing left on the pitch. It was the first real moment that we realised, Jesus, we're onto something here. Like, you know, we can be, we're actually a very good team. Like, that Kerry team, I remember doing a bit of research on it a couple of months ago. They had, like, the likes of Peter Crowley, Paul and Michael Ganey, Johnny Buckley, Barry John Keane. Like, all these boys are proven senior and the county players now. So they were all involved in that side. So we were sure that Kerry were going to take Tip handy enough. But I think, remembering, we watched the video of that match, and it was a dirty all night, and it was a gale force wind, and I think Tip just pipped them by a point. So then, going into that, knowing that it was Tipperary and not Kerry, I'd be lying if I said that we weren't fairly confident that we could take over or take them. You know, we had, and I think actually in the match itself, their captain got sent off. I think the fullback McDonald got sent off. He was picking up Murphy, so I think after that Murphy just took off, and I think he scored 5 or 6 that day. And when he's in that kind of form, there was nobody going to stop him at that stage, and we just kind of controlled the game. And again, like, we were defensively sound all year, and no more so in that game. Like, to concede 4 points in an All-Ireland semi final was decent going.
Yeah, magic, and suddenly you're in dreamland then, heading for an All-Ireland final at Breffni Park, and the first coming together of Gavin and McGuinness. Interestingly, Jim Gavin and McGuinness both made their debuts for their counties in 1993, and this is 17 years later they come against each other in management. And obviously, I think, as you'd agree, Danny, the two of them in many ways changed the face of football in the next few years to come. But you know, that was a star-studded Dublin team. You know, guys would go on, they won All-Ireland, so like Rory O'Carroll, Dean Rock, Johnny Cooper, you know, McGrath, you know, and Donegal obviously had a host of players as well that would go on, they won an All-Ireland. So it was pretty much down for a 50-50. Breffni Park, though, you've been happy enough about it being at that pitch, Danny, and the build-up to it then, you know, I mean, All-Ireland's a few and far between, and you know, under-21 All-Ireland have been the launch pad to a lot of Donegal success. So, massive game, and just the build-up to it.
Yeah, we were kind of, I think we were all secretly hoping that they were going to put it in Croker, so they would all get a run out in Croker, but that was wishful thinking at the time. But yeah, I suppose Breffni was a fair enough venue for both sides at the time, and like Breffni's a brilliant pitch to play on, like, you know. But the build up, yeah, it was good. It was tense. I mean, one of the things that was brand new to me at the time, and I know a few other lads, was all these media days. You know, like, you were getting calls from the local papers and stuff, and then you had to do the kind of the media days a week or two out, and you were chatting to kind of the TG Carr wanted things, you know, and stuff. So it was intimidating enough at the time, you know. But again, looking back on it, like, it was very enjoyable that time, and it just kind of gave us a sense that we're in a really, like, we have a really, really good chance here at winning All-Ireland. You know what I mean? Like, the whole country or the whole county's eyes is on us. So it's massive for us, like, you know. But yeah, I think one of the major things, and I know maybe this is something that I know the management team mightn't have liked to have been mentioned too much at the time, but we came down. I remember we had a bonding session, and we did a bit of bowling as a team, whatever. But I remember out of that, 5 or 6 of us came down with a bit of a virus at the time, and I think it was only leaked after the final itself. And there was 5 or 6 of us. I mean, I was one of the boys who was down sick with that, actually, because I remember we were going to train. We trained in, the boys in Dublin trained in DCU Mondays and Wednesdays, and I landed out to training in DCU the Monday before the All-Ireland final, and McGuinness sent me back across town on the bus back, and he said, you need to be in bed for 2 days, just cold sweats, just energy sapped, just wasn't in the form to be training at all, like. And there was a couple others that were impacted by it as well. And I think when you bring that into the actual game itself, we lost Anthony McFadden after 20 minutes. I think Thomas McKinley had to come off. Like, they were two key cogs. Like, McKinley was a serious man marker. McFadden was a workhorse. He was up and down. He was massive to our game plan. And to lose them boys after 20 minutes, you know, you kind of have to reshuffle. I do think it had an impact on the whole kind of game plan. But, I mean, you could never kind of foresee what was going to happen in the last couple of minutes in the game. But, yeah, that was a kind of, like, it's a shame that's the way the final went, you know. But well, we gave it a good enough rattle, and we just came up a wee bit short.
Yeah, and Danny, I didn't know about that sickness in the background, you know. And you just want, particularly for a day as big as that, for just everything to be right. And if you lose it, then, you know, you can take that on the chin. But if there's other factors in the background like a bit of a virus there, and then a couple of, as I say, players gone off. It's such a blow. But I mean, it still came down to the last kick of the game, basically. And again, as you said, one goal conceded the whole run, but it wasn't that final. And we look at it, 110-108. That 1-8 would have sneaked you across the line again in terms of a 1-point victory, but it wasn't to be. But we still had the opportunity. Do you remember in them last few minutes how that penalty came about?
Yeah, I actually, like, I've watched it back a few times since. Like, if we were playing in modern day rules and the referee was going to award the advantage, Killian Morrison, I think, had tapped the ball in the net and we'd gotten the goal. And I don't know now if the ref blew in that time, whatever, but I do remember on the footage that Morrison had put it in the net, and then now, if he was going to play an advantage, the goal would have stuck. But if you were going to come down to the last kick of the game, there's no other man in the country that you'd want to be taken a penalty than Murphy, like, and it's just one of those things, you know. It just didn't come off from him. I mean, he struck it wild, well, like, but it just kind of, then things just go for you, they'll go against you, you know. Unfortunately for us, it didn't go on.
Yeah. But you know what, Danny, it was, as you say, fantastic experiences. You still had the Ulster crown. You'd gotten played in an All-Ireland final. And, you know, massive memories. And, of course, those players then, you know, like to Mark McHugh was playing, Murphy, of course, as we mentioned, Leo McLoone, the Brick, Paddy McGrath, all those guys in would be such a key part for Donegal. James McCarthy was another Dublin player I was mentioning. I can't even read my own writing. But, those players in, as I say, McGuinness and Gavin, we're going to lock horns a few times in the future. And such a fascinating tale behind all that, because you say McGuinness at the time, you know, Leave Connell had kind of, we had beaten him just the season before in a county final in that, and McGuinness was kind of like, he had left Leave Connell and had gone to a Donegal job a few times and not got it. But this was the platform, I suppose, then to put him into the senior frame and really take Donegal from nowhere on. So brilliant times, Danny. Thanks so much for sharing the story. So, Danny, just at the minute there, you, yourself and Rachel, you're doing a bit of online tutorials. Is that's what's happening during the lockdown?
Aye, that's right. Yeah, flat out online teaching here. Yeah, so we're cooped up here in the apartment. I think it's we're under a lot more restrictions than yous are back at home. We can't really leave the apartment at all now. You have to apply for a special permit to get down to the grocery shop in the evening in some areas. And there's a national curfew at 8 o'clock at night. So we're kind of, cabin fever is setting in. Like, there's only so many kind of All Ireland Gold finals you can watch as well, just to kind of pass the time.
Well, listen, Debbie, I hope I've helped with a wee half an hour or whatever to lighten the day a wee bit. And thank you so much. You've definitely lightened ours. That's a great story, Danny. So as I said, to me, to make sure and say, our more a slang go fall.
Yeah, that's right. That's good stuff.
Good man.
The Dry Arch Complex 24-hour service station, Letterkenny. We're here for all your needs.
Right, folks, now on the DL Debate, I'm delighted to say we're joined by a Meath legend and all-round good guy. It's going to take me a while to actually introduce this guy, the amount of stuff that he's won. I'll not even go into his club stuff, we'll cover that in a minute, but he obviously is a double All-Star, double All-Ireland winner, 5 Leinsters, 3 National Leagues, has won, play for Ireland and Aussie Rules. He's now a long-time columnist with the Mirror and also, as I say, great pundit on the radio with RTE. Bernard Flynn, welcome to the show.
Great to be talking to good Donegal people, Brennan. Cheers.
Good man, Bernard, good man. Bernard, you know what? Fantastic time there looking back. I was a young lad when you were at your peaks there and those early All-Irelands we meet in that, and great memories of that was just kind of your formative years. And I was looking back at some of the footage, brought back some brilliant memories, some real golden era stuff, I think, in terms of All-Irelands and that. But before we get through to that, Bernard, your club career was fascinating as well. And I think us from Donegal, we kind of know everything that's happening around our area and our province. We don't really know too much about going out of the province. And you're someone that's played for a couple of clubs. You played with Colmkills in Meath and Joseph's in Leeds. And, of course, had a brilliant career then with Mullingar Shamrocks in your neighbouring Westmeath. How did that all come about?
It's been a great question, because very few have asked that question, would you believe? I was a young lad in around Drogheda, is where I lived, Brennan there. It was right on the border. I went to school in Drogheda. I socialised and all my mates. I was literally 500, 600 yards inside the border. Some might say the right side of it, honey, having a bit of crack with the Loud lads. But I lived literally in Drogheda and in Loud, if you like. So I was there going, playing football. Things were good. I mean, 85, 6, 7, and then 88. And I was sort of ingrained in the area. And something just came over me that I'd love to just get away for some reason. Got married young at 24. How mad was that back in the day at 24? My young lad came home, my daughter at 24, you'd shoot them and say they're going to get married, that type of thing. But I just got married young, yeah. And he said, we set up a business. I went to, I bought a nightclub and a pub with Michael Dempsey. Some of your listeners might know Michael from training the Kilkenny hurling team, a great guy, super guy. He was my best man. So we bought a nightclub and a pub for a few years. Got a few quid together, and we opened an interior design shop in Mullingar in 1991, about 2 months just before the Down All-Ireland final. And we were there. I'm still here since 28, 29 years, 25 years in that business. And just got a pin one day, Brendan, to answer your question. Got a pin one day and came to Mullingar to open a business. After being having a business with Michael Dempsey for a while, so myself and my wife, 25 years, doing that in Mullingar. And that's why we're still here, 3 kids born here. And looking out the back garden in Westmead, it's hard to believe a mead man stuck here in Westmead.
And tell me, I was just looking at Mullingar's roll of honour there, but from 9 years, from 86 to 95, 7 titles, I mean, absolutely phenomenal stuff to keep coming back, winning championship and every championship. How many of them were you involved in at that time, Bernard?
I'll tell you, Brendan, I'll never forget them because they're a great bunch. I moved into town, opened the business, and, you know, I said, like, probably at that stage, 1991, I mean, I had it, you know, it was 26 or 7, whatever it was, and I won 4 in a row, Brendan, with Mullingar Shamrocks, then lost 4 semi-finals in a row, and then I had to finish up with through injury. But I had 4 great years, won 4 in a row. We're going to have a reunion at the end of the year, 25-year, in 95, 4 in a row team, and some brilliant guys. And I was lucky enough at my home club, Colum Kills, to win underage, junior, intermediate. We went senior, Robbie O'Malley, myself. So two great clubs, and people might ask why. I literally just was living here. It sort of felt right at the time. People might question that, but the people in the area, and we had a business here, and I joined the club, and it's probably the one question all my life I asked, did I do the right thing, did I not? And I still to this day ask that question, but what a club, what guys. Ned Moore now, who's managing, a young lad is playing, they won it there 2 years ago, he was playing and stuff like that. So it's where my kids are, my family and my business. And, you know, it was a big decision. The Colum Kills were brilliant in East Meath there, you know, to make that decision. But 4 in a row, loved every minute of it, and some great days, wonderful days.
Great days, Brennan. You actually played along with a teammate of mine, Kieran Ryan, after that. He came up here, and it was a big part of our side up here. He certainly added a bit of strength and power to the Unions team at the time, something that we were lacking, and we were glad to have him up here. Bernard, do you know what I'm just looking at? You came into the Meath team in 84. You were quite young. You came into it quite fresh, which was going to be important in terms of the All-Irelands that were coming up in a few years later. You play underage as well, and you were brought in quite young to the senior setup.
Yeah, no, came in actually in 83, Brendan, would you believe? A great little story for some of your listeners who, some of the guys I played against in Donegal would know Sean Boylan pretty well. But we'd won the junior championship in 1983, myself and Bobby O'Malley, a big breakthrough from our club, Colum Kills, East Meath, over along the beach in Bettystown there. A small, very small club at the time. They've grown into a big club now, but in 1983, when we won the final, we were having a celebration over in the Rosslyn Hotel, just outside Drogheda. It's now a nursing home where my mother-in-law is in. But at the time, it was a big sort of venue, about 2 miles outside Drogheda. We were there that night celebrating the club, a small club, but with a few hundred people. It was a big thing for us. And he drove the whole way from Dunboyne, where he lives, to actually come to East Meath. And it was early October. And he came around 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, and he called myself and Bobby O'Malley outside from the function, if you like, away from the main area, and the main group. And he asked us into the panel. And just to show you what he did, at 2 18-year-olds, and we played under 21 that year as well, just out of minor. And he brought us in and played us a few weeks later in a few tournament games. I think we got into some of the back end, a couple of the league matches, and a few minutes at the end of league games there. So to do that and have that vision with young lads, a junior club, and that's what he did that night at the final. He brought us into the panel in 83, so sort of an early sign of his man management skills, and he'd young lads in his pocket from an early stage at that stage. Now, we broke his heart a few times, but apart from that, what a man, what a guy. I had only one manager in 11 years with Mead, 12 years, and that was Sean Boylan, and you know, a great, great human being, a legend. I really think people don't realise what an incredible man he was, what he went through with different teams and the things he did deal with, but he was the most incredible man manager I've ever seen and ever witnessed.
Brilliant, brilliant. And Bernard, you know, you obviously come in to say then you started to make your way into the starting team, but 1987, you know, a lot of people looking back at Meath then, you know, there hadn't been an All-Ireland since 67, you know, massive, massive famine, you know, to come through and make what was a breakthrough year again for you being so young to be involved. It must have been an amazing time for you, Bern.
It was incredible. In 84, we won the Centenary Cup, and I was playing, remember the first real big game was against Cavan, then against Monaghan. We won that. It might seem, it was a huge thing for us, and particularly our older players, Colm O'Rourke, Joe Castles, Mick Lyons, Jerry McIntyre, they were the real leaders in that. They were the heart and soul of that team. So in 86, the big breakthrough, Brendan, for us was in 86. Dublin had been sort of the kingpins of Leinster, huge. They won 83, they were winning Leinster's. And I played in 84 against me, lost my couple of pints and played very well. But in 86, we beat Dublin in Leinster final. That gave a massive, massive sense of confidence and belief to beat a very good Dublin team. And I think we wouldn't have won the All-Ireland in 87 except for the experience against Kerry in 86 semi-final. Remember, it was Mark and Paddy O'Shea. Look, we played very well, naive, made a few crucial mistakes for goals. And I think that led to 87. But yes, 20 years on, Meath hadn't won since 67. I watched, some of your followers might have watched the game it was on. I've never seen it before. I watched the other night, the 67 match against Cork, to come back from the dead. So 20 years in Meath not to have won anything, a bit like Donegal in 92, you know, and then in 2012, 20 years on. It's a huge thing. And I was in a bubble, Brendan, then. I was only 21, 22. And for this to happen, junior players, we hadn't won intermediate at that stage. We won intermediate in 87. So myself and Bobby Malley were playing in a junior club. And in 87, half the outfield team were actually not senior players. They were intermediate or junior, including the goalie as well, Mickey McQuillan. But that's where Boylan was brilliant. And to actually, for our area, who wasn't a big football area, just as a draw, to actually have two All-Ireland medal winners coming back home on the Monday night was just an extraordinary, incredible achievement in a country area. Outside Drogheda, it was just brilliant. But you were living in a bubble, and just you thought this was going to last forever. It happened the following year, and then you've barren years, and you wonder, you know, when it happens so young, you think it'll last forever. But you just got to enjoy it, and we did. We were very, very young, and we had a great old time. And there was a huge divide there because you had Brian Stafford, PJ Gillick, Robbie O'Malley, myself, David Beggy, and then you had a cohort of really experienced leaders, great men. And you know, we looked up to them, the Castles, the McIntyres, the Rokes, the Lyons. They drove the thing, along with Boylan, but they drove it.
Tough, tough, tough men. They were tough guys. I think Donal Reid actually remarked on that when they lost in 1990, the year guys, that the power that some of the Meath guys had was unreal. But Bernie, you know, back to back, you know, we obviously beat Cork in 87, and then Cork again in 88. Now, the 87 final looked like you controlled it and you had Cork where you wanted them. Obviously playing a team the second year round, you know, you went through the whole emotions of Leinster again, back in the All-Ireland final. You know, sensational stuff for a team to get back into a final. But, you know, you have a team gunning for you then. The mindset of getting into that final the second year then, did you really think, hey, they're going to have an extra bit between the teeth? Or did you think, listen, we have their number?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because 87, so the second half, that was probably the best 35 minutes we played as a team. The second half against Cork, we won by 6 points in the end. We were 4 or 5 down with that great block with Mick Lyons against Jimmy Kerrigan. But we'd won the league after replay against Dublin in 88. We went on an all-star trip in between the first day in 88 against Dublin, didn't play particularly well. Went on the all-star trip, came home, played the league final and won by 12 or 13, I think it was 9 or 10 points, whatever it was. Played really well. We probably thought we were invincible. We'd beaten Cork in the league, I think, semi-final in 88, earlier on that year as well. And so 87, beating them in the league. And 88, they should have beaten us in the drawn match. We were poor, didn't play well as a team. And we went to Scotland one year. You might remember the four-in-a-row matches against Dublin. But Boyle in 88 brought us to Newry, Ballymiscannon Hotel, between the drawn match in 88 and the final, and we trained for the weekend there. We had a great weekend, but we were poor. That we should have beaten Cork in let's say, we shouldn't have beat them in the first match in 88, beat them in the replay, and then in 1990, I think that's what done us. But this 88 replay when Gerry McInerney was sent off, that was a massive, massive moment with the 14 men. And I think everybody just put the bit between their teeth in the second half. And I think it was one of the most courageous performances we've had as a squad. But then again, it done us in 1990 against Cork. You're going to say, going to keep beating them, keep winning. But in fairness, in 1990, they got their day in the sun. And maybe it's one we felt we left behind. But they beat us and beat us by 2 points. And that was coming for a few years. So I think, you know, the crookeds and the straights in life, Brendan, you know yourself, I think these things nearly even themselves out over a period of time. But some great battles against Cork. But I will say, they weren't pretty to watch. The football wasn't great at times, but the physicality was pretty brutal at times.
Yeah, it was tough. You know, even last night, and all this time in between, just looking at that second game, and I guess I was thinking about the emotion of Cork after losing an All-Ireland final and being back in it. Larry Tompkins, with a minute to go, kicks a crazy point at 45 under the pressure. He was under, lamps it over the bar, and it's last chance saloon. You just hoof a ball in around the box, and somehow something goes over a foot and the free in. Tommy Sugu's surrounded, he nearly got clipped by one of the Cork boys, but of course Stafford wasn't going to miss from 13 yards. But even me watching that back now, Bernard, in the pit of my stomach, you know, I could feel the tension. Like it's mad how our games, because of the way scoring goes, and because you're nearly always in it, and when you've two of the best teams in Ireland going at it right down to the death, it breeds such excitement. And I think probably a bit different from the modern game now, Bernard, whereas the team gets into a certain way, they block off all avenues. There's no chance for that late revival. But in them days, you could hoof it in and anything could happen. I know that can still happen nowadays, but it's less likely because of tactics.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the sort of the ignorance or the naivety of teams back then, and let's be honest, some of it wasn't pretty. There's no point in anyone saying any different. Some of the stuff was very, very good. We had some great games against Dublin, Donegal even at times, but those days, you didn't think that way, Brendan. Honestly, it's only now you realise when you move on. The way to close out games, it's a speciality in itself. It's really a skill. Dublin have perfected it brilliantly. Tyrone back in 2003, 5 and 8, they were superb at it. Armagh for a while. But that's why Kerry were never great at that. Meade were never particularly great at closing out games. You see this year, honestly, like we just kept going, or Meade, Cork players. Like you never thought of being ahead. You went so mad for the same ball, the same way, right up to the last second, and it might have been stupid at times or silly, or it was just the reckless sheer bravery and honesty the fellas went with. And some of it was you know, plain silliness at times when you're throwing your bodies in, where maybe drawing a foul, look at down in 91 that came against us, some of the silly fouling we did. But David Beggy got a free at the end of that match, that's the one you're speaking about. He should never have got that free. It wasn't a free. He fell over a foot. You're quite right. We got a free in to draw the match, and we won the next day just about. But, I mean, we got a break there. There's no question doubt about it. And Cork in 1990 got a couple of breaks they had never got against us. So that day we got a free. We should have been beaten in 88. And the Cork were Billy Morgan, Dinny Allen, they were furious. They were infuriated at the end. And they went crazy against the referee, and quite rightly so. But, I mean, that's the way it goes. You take those, and when you're playing poorly and you draw against a team that were probably 5 points better than you, it probably gave us that little lift for the replay.
Bernard, fascinating stuff. Bernard, see, just before we get into 1991, and I know, listen, nothing was up for to win at the time, and you know, sometimes in GA we look all to the finals or who won what. I mean, in terms of GA, and probably one of the most amazing sagas we've ever had has to be, you know, 91 and your games against Dublin. I mean, such memorable occasions. But just before we get into them, Bernard, training at the time, now we know where training's gone in terms of, you know, being up at the top and that, and yous are pretty much in the shake now every year. You're playing in the top, you're winning the league, you're in league finals, you're in championship. Was, you know, you're doing well with club, etc. Was there time there where things was getting a bit too much in terms of the commitment, or was it all in its place where you were getting your breaks throughout the winter and then you were coming back? Or how was the schedule at that time? How did you marry the whole thing in terms of that and business as well?
Yeah, Sean Bynum was pretty, he was probably pretty innovative, believe it or not. And you, people know he was actually a hurling man through and through. First of all, football wasn't his first love. It wasn't what he was coaching. He was involved in hurling, playing with Meath, coaching Camogie teams. But his organisational skills that he brought to the Meath team at that time, for around mid-80s to, you know, let's say when he finished 96, 99, his training and his organisation was incredible. We trained more than most, and 3-4 times a week he was doing at the time. He would come up with some really unusual swimming, canoeing. The Hill of Tara, the pre-season training, I found barbaric at times. I found it so hard. I was a smaller guy, speed or sprinting, all that sort of stuff, ball work. But the pre-season stuff that he did in the Hill of Tara, I believe it probably won us a couple of All-Irelands. It was unbelievably hard. I remember doing the beach and the Hill of Tara. We did a pre-season for a couple of months. I will never forget. I actually cringe. I nearly get sick when I think of it. A great little story, Brendan, when he started on the Meath team. I was 19. And he started with Brush Shields, Mad Brush Shields, the singer. He used to bring him to put on his lights on his Jeep and his van. And over in the sand dunes, we just had little lamps and stuff. And he would start his training session. It would just be incredible. I remember getting sick down my top. And there was a big sort of dune with grass growing out of it. And he was at the far end, and there was no light or anything. So I dived into it. I couldn't run. I thought I was going to die. And Lizzie was vomiting, getting sick. And I came round to him where he was at the far end, joining in the second time for the lads. And I thought he didn't see me, and he stopped the whole training session. And I'll never forget the dune he gave me. He said, "You never, ever, ever give up on your teammates ever again." I never did. It was humiliating, and he was right. And I'll tell you, it was the hardest little lesson I ever learned. And in front of your teammates, a young lad like that, I literally thought I was going to die. I couldn't actually run anymore. And I didn't do it again, but he doesn't miss a trick. I tell you that, the same man, he didn't miss a trick.
You know, fantastic quote there. I love it. Bernard, the Hill of Tara, you that's fantastic.
It was barbaric.
I think Donegal, the same in the sand dunes around there under Jim's time, mate. There was a lot of tough nights, training, which stood you later on in the summer. It's hard getting your head around at the time, them kind of pre-season tough training, but you were glad of it by the time you took the park and when the weather was good. Bernard, you're going into the championship again. Dublin, you obviously, they were looking to get back, get into an All-Ireland. They had aspirations, won an All-Ireland, so would yous. You were meeting in Leinster first round, and it got into this epic thing. Just going back to what you're saying there, Brendan, about going for every ball and dying every ball. I think some of that has been lost with the back door and with knockout been going. And I still think that's right, because it was terrible. Some of the great teams that, you know, would have been out in the first round and that. And you know, what could have happened as the season went on if they had another chance at it. But I think that fed into that. But you're going into this Dublin saga, Bernard, and you're obviously looking to win all there, and so were they. And these four games in where they evolve, I think for me it's the most fascinating saga that's ever happened in the GAA.
Yeah, it was just something surreal. It really was, because we lost to the All Ireland against Cork in 1990, if you recall. I was saying earlier on, and then 91, and I believed we had everyone's faith. We were going well. It was the first round. People might forget, this is the first round of a Leinster Championship. And the first day, it was a fairly decent match. Dublin were well ahead at half time, in the first half, came back. But that little bubble for those 4 or 5 weeks, Brendan, was just something. We never witnessed that like that. We literally became like professional players. Work was gone, family was gone, friends were gone completely. And literally we were together maybe 4 or 5 times a week around that time. And the four games just... You actually, it was surreal. One game after another, extra time, and then to the fourth game on a Saturday evening. It nearly destroyed you, because we were allowed to go out on the Saturday evening, and we had to play Wicklow the following week, and we only drew at Wicklow. Yeah. We only drew after that, and then we beat them in a replay. So we had 4 games, then 2 games against Wicklow, and we got to Down, we were on a 10th game, and feeling nearly invincible, and we got caught. Sorry, we didn't get caught. We were beaten by a better team, a brilliant Down team who deserved to win. But the 4 games against Dublin, I can't put into words what it was like living that dream. And that sort of time was just, you couldn't go on. the guys, the big superstars get it now, the Michael Murphys, the Dublin players and all that, Donegal team, like they're big stars now. But then back in the day, you won All Ireland, you could still go places and everyone knew you, but in that 4 or 5 weeks against Dublin, you could not go outside your door, going to the shop or anything like that. It was nothing but football was spoken of. So it was a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant time. The only shame is we didn't second go and win the All-Ireland to finish it off.
Yeah, no, that was a disaster. Listen,
what a signal.
Lucky you were your own boss as well. Maybe at the time, Bernard, you could understand it. But, you know, just looking, it seemed that season for me, and this isn't me looking back. I remember being a young lad watching at this time. You seemed to have this thing where you would let the team get into a lead and you would always come with this brilliant late flurry, which is really a sign of a confident team that knows that, you know, as we start to peg you back and come back, you're going to panic and we're going to get the better of you. And that the final game, Bernard, on that saga just was fascinating in terms of the Keith Barr penalty. Dublin 3-0, would have put them 6-0, you know, time was closing down. And you really felt that that was the turning point. Obviously then, the unbelievable goal, Foley's goal, that great run through the defence. And then, of course, Beggy hitting the winner. And, you know, still, that goal and that point, I think, is etched in every GA person's brain in terms of, you know, of course, getting one over in the Dubs as usual. But as you said, that led to such a feeling of being unbeatable. It just felt like in that final against Down, then, as you went through the rounds, that you let them get too far ahead. And when you sprung in the action, there just wasn't enough time on the clock.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're beaten, the one thing with Sean Boylan always, you know, we were sort of led to believe, and the way we were trained and coached was, when you're beaten, you shut your mouth, you never complained. We're beaten, Brendan, by a better team on the day, there's no doubt. When you go 11 points down, there's no one to blame. Only yourself, and the team is better than you, and that's what Down actually did. Robbie O'Malley was a huge loss that day. Colm O'Rourke starting as well. But just going back a second, that people actually forget, the semi-final against Roscommon was in the best, I think one of the greatest games of football I ever played in. We were way behind in that game. We got 9 points, I think, from play to close out that game and win by a point. So that's after the 4 games against Dublin, the 2 against Wicklow. So at that stage, we were nearly believing nobody and nothing could beat us. But the Down team that hit the field that day, particularly from midfield up, I thought they were just incredible. And the half-back line. And they played very clever football. They used the ball a lot more than us. Our tackling was indisciplined in the first half. We gave 6 or 7 bad frees away. But overall, if you look at that Down team, Greg Blaney, Ross Carr, Mickey Linden, Mason, Whitnell, McCartan, I mean, Barry Breen and Emma Burns, they had 2 great games as well. The half-back line was very, very strong. And they won in 94 as well. People probably didn't give them credit for how good a squad and how class, the sheer skill and class they had. But in saying that, if we just, you know, 91, we had a couple of goal chances. I had one, stuff like that as well. You always remember Morocco had another. And we came back to 2 points. But at the end of the day, one is as good as 10. It makes no difference. When you lose. But the Down team that day, they scored 116. They were a better team probably by 3 or 4 points, being totally honest with you.
Yeah. Well, listen, we knew all about them that year, Bernard. They hammered us in Ulster final. It was 115 to 10 points, something in their... around that. So there's a lot of questions asked about Donegal at that time, and it's an interesting story that they regrouped and had another go, thankfully, in 92 and got across the line. Of course, Derry and Down, Donegal all battling out and winning all Ireland's in those years. And Bernard, you kept playing then, you played until 94, was it, with the county?
Yeah, no, I had a very bad injury, Brendan. I probably finished my career in 92, even though I came back at I severed my whole knee. I was in hospital for 11, 12 days at a 16-hour operation. And they put the whole knee, literally when it happened to me in a club game, the only thing holding my leg together was my skin. My kneecap was smashed, there's 6 pins in it. And my medial lateral and cruciate ligaments were all snapped in half. They were completely one end of my leg to the other. And it was a pretty horrific operation. But I came back. I built a gym at home. I came back after 8, 9 months. In hindsight, I came back too early. Played at the club, came back with Meade. In the league final against Armagh, we won the league. And I probably wasn't quite just the same, I have to say. It was only 80%, 85%. And it was just a horrific injury. And I remember in 94, you see, I had a bad hip injury and was getting injections after injection. I went to Pat O'Neill in early 95 and I was playing but under a lot of painkillers and injections. And he told me my hip was very, very bad. I got a hip replacement there 11 years ago. And it was because of that. And that's what was killing me for a good while. Not so much my knee, but it really aggravated one side, compensated for the other. Long story short, I had a serious bad hip and I was getting injections for years into it. I got a lot without saying anything. I was eating painkillers without saying too much. And Pat O'Neill sat me down. He said, Bernard, you're going to be in a wheelchair unless you give this up. But I gave up in March 95 and played on the club for a few years. I was literally on one leg at times there getting injections and I couldn't play. I think it was 98. I gave up at the club then, but just got a bad injury. And the sad part was I felt I was getting stronger. I felt I was getting better. And the knee really just smashed me and aggravated the hip. I was just about getting by with the hip, but got a hip replacement and getting a knee replacement now early next year. So looking forward to that. Can't wait.
Listen, I was away for a bit of surgery myself there recently, Bernard. Funny, I was just getting back properly at work and what have you, and when the lockdown happened, so I've been cooped up now for I would say must be about 9-10 weeks, say. So I'll be looking forward to everything blowing over here now soon, Bernard. And so, Bernard, you started to do the media work then. You did an article with the Mirror and started to do some punditry.
Yeah, no, when I finished up, T.J. Cunningham rang me from the Herald. He was the editor. He asked me, would I do a column? I did it for 6-7 years, and then I joined the Mirror about 18 years ago. I do a column a couple of times a week. It's only once now with the lockdown on a Saturday. But I enjoy, just listen, some guys, the Harnans and McInnes and Lyons and that mightn't like it, but I suppose some guys call it bullshit or whatever you want to call it, but someone has to do it. I sort of enjoy it. It's edgy. With the Mirror, you're allowed to say what you like type of thing. But I love going to the games and I meet you, Brendan. I love live football. I'm not great to look back at old games, and even if you played well or bad and stuff like that, they don't do a lot for me, I have to say. And all the games have been on, it's grand. I've looked at an odd one, but looking back at old games, doesn't it? I love, no matter how bad it is, going to the present day, present games, I find it fascinating. I love that moment, being in the games, doing the commentary and co-commentary on games. You can't beat it. That's what it's about for me. And I just love going, no matter how bad they are, I've always loved my football. Even when it was going through a tough time, people were knocking it. I sort of always tried to see the good side of it. Some guys don't agree with me. I'd see the glasses half full. And I think, Brendan, our game is evolving now for the better. I think the last couple of years there's been a mindset change within reason. I think people are trying to play the game a bit more offensive, and I do believe it's in a better place now than it was maybe 7 or 8 or 9 years ago. But with all due respect, I don't knock the teams, maybe, okay, the Tyrones, maybe Donegal for a year or two, if you like. I just find that fascinating, trying to break them down, blanket defence. And just for me, I love going to the games and watch to see how they unfold.
Well, Bernard, yeah, from going to games myself, it's always great to see you. You have a great positive way with you, which I think comes through in your commentary. I love listening to you. You have a great article in the Mirror. Bernard, what an absolutely fascinating time for me as a young lad watching sport, and anybody that's in the GA, you know, looking back at it, that brilliant full forward line, yourself, O'Rourke, and Stafford, like a glorious time for football. So many brilliant memories, and I love your attitude now to sport going forward. And listen, Bernard, hope to see you very soon when this is all cleared over, back at county matches, enjoying the crack and enjoying the football.
Yes, Brendan, just the one thing on that I'd say, Brendan, my childhood hero growing up was Mikey Sheehy. And I got his jersey after the 86 semi-final when they beat us. And just looking back, and I remember getting to know him quite well afterwards on a few trips we were abroad and stuff, golf trips. And I remember saying one thing that stuck to me, and how true it is. Like, he said, Bernard, and I was telling him, you know, I used to watch him and study him and all that crack. And he was just telling me, Bernard, for every good game I had with Kerry, I had a bad one. And Brendan, let me tell you, we've all had bad games and bad moments, and I've had them as much as anybody else. And you know what? At the end of it's true. And despite, when you look back at some of the matches and you think this guy played well or that guy or some of the great players and stuff like that, everyone missed chances. We all had games we weren't happy with, and we had some great games. But what we have in the medals, and I think the older you get, it's the friendships and the memories and stuff like that. I think that's what's really, really important. It really is. Like, even to meet, I had to meet the Donegal players, and I meet Martin Shovlin there a while back, had a great chat with him. Matt Gallagher, and you meet Declan Bonner, you meet Martin McHugh, and, you know, Donal Reid, Joyce McBullen, any of the guys, and some brilliant, brilliant men that you can talk and sit down and chat to. Because at the end of the day, no one has it all, no one gets it all. We're friends and memories, and at the end of the day, that's all we have. And a few injuries thrown in if you're unlucky, that's all.
Well, listen, what a brilliant way to sign off the show. Bernard Flynn, thank you so much for joining us on DL Debate.
Cheers. Thanks, Brendan.
The Dry Arch Complex 24-hour service station, Letterkenny. We're here for all your needs.
Check this. Okay. Right, folks, that's a wrap for episode 10. What a fascinating show. You know, great to hear from Danny Kern what life's like for the exiles out there and playing football in that heat. Magic stuff. And of course, Bernard Flynn, what a down-to-earth great guy. You know, what a career he has, and he doesn't want to look back at it. You can imagine how that makes guys at Gosfield. But listen, Bernard Flynn, thank you so much. Danny Kern, thank you so much. Folks, I hope you enjoyed the show, and I'll chat to you next week.